C'est une invitation à venir. Vous pouvez trouver toute l'information sur Kwawatonk, salon du livre des Premières Nations. Kwawatonk, K-W-A-H-I-A-T-O-N-H-K, salon du livre des Premières Nations.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
On regardera un peuple uni et debout, fort de la force d'un être. Mes champs de paix seront la sève de ma survivance.
Contagious virus, but we can keep it from spreading without having to keep ourselves from seeing others. When you bring your friends home or to a chalet, it means a maximum of 10 people keeping a 2-meter distance, using individual plates and glasses and not sharing things, washing your hands regularly for at least 20 seconds, and cleaning shared surfaces. It means keeping each other safe. The virus is still here. Let's continue to protect ourselves properly.
A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
At home, at a friend's place, and before entering a store, I wash my hands as soon as I can. I do it to protect the ones I love, my grandson, my husband, so I can continue to have people over this summer and enjoy weekends camping with my family. Because COVID-19 is still around, let's keep at it. Let's continue to properly protect ourselves. We're fighting the virus, so take a stand. Wash your hands.
All against one. All against COVID-19. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
My baby don't mess around because she loves me so, and this I know for sure. Really wanna, but can't stand to see me walk out the door. Oh, 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 don't try to fight the feeling, cause the thought alone is killing me right now. Yeah. Thank God for mom and dad for sticking two together, cause we don't know how. How, yeah. Nothing at all. We get together, oh, we get together. But sex is always better when it's feelings involved. Yeah, ooh. If what they say is, then what makes
love exception.
So why you? Oh, we so can deny you if you know we're not happy.
Yeah.
The Dyke March in Toronto is an integral part of Pride celebration. The first march of a lesbian identified women in Toronto took place in October 1981, but it was only in 1996 that the first official Dyke March was launched. Now it's 2017. Joining us in the studio today are Jade Squadron and Lauren Cronick, organizers and community members of the Dyke March. Jade is a Jewish non-binary trans woman. She's a communist. Lauren Cronick is a genderqueer, white, Jewish femme from Montreal and Ottawa who works in communications in the HIV nonprofit world. They have previous experience organizing the Toronto Dyke March, currently organized with the Night March, and was on the board of directors of Pride Toronto. Lauren regularly covers themselves and others in glitter and is interested in dismantling the patriarchy and community organizing. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
First, tell us a bit about yourselves and your role in organizing and participating in the Dyke March.
I'm Jades. I have actually not formally participated in organizing the Dyke March, but I have organized to participate in the Dyke March. And, you know, a lot of the time it's been actually kind of making a point of who the Dyke March has yet to include, who, like, you know, maybe is already a large presence at the Dyke March, but, you know, my experience being trans femme, you know, and seeing certain people at the Dyke March just sending certain messages, maybe sometimes unintentionally, about who is and who isn't welcome. I think that there's a large number of people who have similar and sometimes very different experiences from me who, you know, are looking at a event that was made to be more inclusive than, you know, some of the other events that are happening at the same time, and then are still finding themselves trying to look for a way in and asking what it means that, you know, their experiences have been the way that they have been, sometimes positive, but, you know, just as often, like, negative in ways that are kind of really unacceptable.
So what do you mean by who's welcome and who isn't? You mentioned inclusivity.
I think that a lot of the time, you know, things start with a good plan, and that's kind of how the Dyke March started in Toronto, which was where the first sort of march of its kind did happen. And they were really bothered by the way that, you know, sexism and lesbophobia kind of was a problem in the more broad Pride community, the LGBT community, whatever descriptor you want to use for how people were organizing at that time. And they tried to open up a new sort of event, and it, in general, it catered to lesbians, but that was kind of on the surface. The majority of the people who were engaged with it were white. The two people who started it were white, and they were also cisgender. And I think that at the time they were doing something that was, like, fairly radical, but certainly when there have been times where the Dyke March could have grown or could have been able to encompass more and, you know, do something better for people who had even less, it didn't always take that opportunity.
I see.
So my experience with the Dyke March was first off as an organizer when I first came to Toronto. So I was a member of the Dyke March organizing committee. And I think having, I guess, witnessed the Dyke March from afar before I was living in Toronto, I had seen, like, the Dyke March split off into Take Back the Dyke and the Dyke March. And so I was, it was really interesting, you know, watching what was happening politically with queer women in Toronto, seeing this sort of, like, conflict happening within whatever the Dyke identified community, like, really looks like. There was obviously, like, a lot of hostility about the Dyke March being a part of Pride Toronto, obviously because Pride Toronto has corporate sponsors. I don't really need to go into that history. But when I came to be a part of organizing with the Dyke March, the year that I was organizing it in 2012, I think we did a really good job at maintaining the critical political part of what the Dyke March is all about. And really making sure that it is a diverse, inclusive, accessible event. So ensuring that trans folks are welcome, ensuring that voices of people of color are centered, you know, really making sure that it is a space for anyone who self-identifies as a dyke and whatever that means to them. And since then, it's I currently organize, will help organize a Dykes on Bicycles contingent, which I've been doing for a couple of years, because when I first moved here, that didn't exist. And it was really important to, you know, just be more than a march and have like have a little bit more fun in the march as well. And to this day, it's still one of my favorite. It's still one of my favorite events of the year. I think, you know, it still has a lot of space to unlearn and grow. And I still, you know, wish it was independent from Pride Toronto for so many reasons. But I'm glad that it still exists as a space to create dialogue. And, you know, I'm glad that there aren't any like more split off events from it anymore.
So before I even ask the question of what is the Dyke March, you mentioned sort of there's a bit of a history around the corporate history of Pride. And Pride was started through the community action of queer and trans women of color. And for people who may not know about that corporate history, what, you know, the corporatization of Pride, what has that looked like over the years and then changing?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the corporatization of Pride has, you know, it's been happening for a while. And I think currently in 2017, we're at this sort of juncture where World Pride happened in Toronto in 2014. And I think that's when the corporatization like really hit this plateau. And I feel like, yeah, like corporatization has existed. I mean, unfortunately. Well, I shouldn't say that, but unfortunately for like many years. And I feel, yeah, it's a complicated thing. I mean, at the end of the day, like Pride is a riot. It continues to be a riot and should be. Cops should not be involved at all in the parade because, you know, Pride was started as like a riot against the cops who were like harming primarily like folks of color and queers of color and trans folks. And so the corporatization of Pride is to bring in more money to, you know, have more programming and have more arts happening. And that's all like great. But at the same time, these corporations who are like throwing their money to Pride are not necessarily practicing like the so-called quote, like inclusivity and diversity that they preach. You know, it's still like we're still seeing like trans folks not getting jobs because of like transphobia within a lot of these corporations. Like,
I mean, shout out if anyone wants to employ a trans person.
Yeah. Right.
It's, what are your thoughts on this?
When Pride started, one of the main reasons why it split off from what was previously, you know, a less radical movement in 1969, initially when people started pushing for gay rights, they were part of something called the Mattachine Society, and it was one of what was referred to as a homophile society, and they were actually, they started for the first 2 years as a communist organization.
Oh, okay.
And then they got co-opted because the majority of their membership was more interested in, like, sticking around, and they started telling their members, you know, you should get diagnosed for being gay by a psychiatrist. And that was actually really devastating and ruined a lot of people's lives because, you know, the way that that worked was not really helpful to anyone. And by the time 1969 rolled around, what was happening was police had started to ban people from wearing three or more articles of clothing from, quote, the wrong gender. And that's why, you know, the people that they were typically enforcing that law on were usually they were racialized, usually they were poor, and they were in, you know, marginalized districts in New York where, you know, there was other conflicts with police prior to that, but nothing really on the same scale as the Stonewall riots. And so they kind of pushed back, and it was really like a product of history. There was this sort of conflict was starting to pop up, but it was going to happen somewhere sooner or later, and it was going to happen to like impoverished, racialized queer people. Whether it was going to happen in New York or somewhere else, that was like a toss up, but that was kind of what was going down. But already, you know, by the time like 1973 rolled around, a lot of the people who had actually participated in Stonewall were getting pushed out of the Pride movement. And by the time the 90s rolled around, like, you can hear about like Stonewall veteran Sylvia Rivera talking about how she can't afford anything that's being sold at Pride. She can't even get food from, like, street vendors while she's at Pride. And in her words, she says that, "I gave you my Pride, but this is not Pride. You haven't given it back to me." And that's kind of, you know, what's happened. Corporations have come in. Now you can't even get a rainbow flag without paying $5. I remember a couple years ago here in Toronto, I was waiting around a subway station, and a woman with her child gave me a VIP Pride pass, said that she was going to go home now and she wasn't going to need it anymore, and she was wondering if anyone wanted. I didn't even know that a VIP Pride pass existed, because there's no way I was going to get one, but it just really, like, kind of shocked me and reminded me of, like, that sort of the direction that Pride, especially, like, the movement or some of the organizations, whether it's, like, the Human Rights Campaign or in Toronto, like, Pride Toronto, the organization, or ECAL, or the 519, that's kind of the direction that they've gone in.
If you're just joining us today, this is We Are U of T on CIUT 89.5 FM. We cover social justice and activism in the city. We're talking about the Dyke March and the politics of Pride with Jades and Lauren Cronick. What is the Dyke March for somebody who has no idea, never has gone there, never has participated?
The Dyke March is a one-day political march that is for Dyke-identified folks, you know, be that what you will. It is an opportunity to take up Dyke space and to maintain the politics of Pride. And the reason why that's important is because, you know, history tells us that it was a women-centered lesbian-started march, and it's really interesting to see how that has evolved over the years. And obviously, you know, it is different from the parade. It is not a parade. It is a march. And so a lot of folks who don't necessarily know what the Dyke March is will be like, oh, it's the women's parade. It is not the women's parade. It is meant to be an inclusive, diverse space that is also accessible. It obviously is not perfect. It's a work in progress, as I like to call it, and has a lot of work to do. I think it's obviously come, you know, a long distance since 1981 when it first started. There's a lot more unlearning to do. I mean, ultimately, it is a volunteer-run event. And it's huge. I mean, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of people taking part in it. There's community groups that are marching as contingents. There's the Dykes on motorcycles, the Dykes on bicycles. Like, it really is a beautiful space that is a political, gorgeous place to be, hopefully for most folks.
Its political roots, you know, you still see them in comparison to Pride. You still see that, like, there's fewer, like, instances of, like, corporations being opportunists and trying to take advantage of the event to hang a float with an advertisement on it. There's, like, a big difference, and it definitely seems a little bit more down to earth, less like a billboard almost, and that's, like, a really big deal. But I think that also, like, one of the tricky things that it kind of came about, like, why was it that Dykes in the 80s started pushing back against, like, the way that Pride had become? And it wasn't always corporate. There were, like, a lot of good reasons and, like, also a couple of bad reasons. One of the reasons why, in particular, it's kind of had a rocky history with trans women is because one of the things that has kind of happened in the last, like, 30 and 40 years is that, you know, there's been a separation between drag and trans people, and it wasn't necessarily always that way. And there were people decades ago who might have ID'd as drag queens then and might be trans women now, and there might be people who would not ID as trans at all. And so ideas have definitely developed, but like, one of the main reasons that the parade split apart was, you know, women felt like their issues weren't being taken seriously. There was, like, plenty of, like, buff, naked guys on floats. And then the only thing that would come close would be there would be sometimes floats would use naked, conventionally attracted women, but they, you know, they wouldn't be taking their clothes off to appeal to lesbians, and sometimes they wouldn't even be lesbians from the community. And it still happens now that corporations will hire people to march in Pride wearing their shirts, and they're entertainers. They're from marketing corporations. But, you know, that was part of it. And then the flip side is that a lot of women felt that, you know, some of the campness, some of the gender nonconformity that was in drag and that they also scapegoated onto trans people was unacceptable. And so, in particular, trans women were not always welcome. And even before the Dyke March started, trans women had a history of being pushed out of spaces. And one time, even like Sylvia Rivera, who I brought up before, had gotten beaten up for trying to talk at a Pride event because lesbian feminists there thought that her appearance was, you know, an insult to womanhood, even though, like, now a lot of people, I think, should consider her, like, a huge activist role model and, like, a huge veteran who really pushed for everyone, not just trans people.
It sounds like so much has changed and continues to change. Like,
for sure.
The Dyke March is a project in flux.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned women not feeling included and issues. Yeah. Does anyone want to speak to what were some of those maybe original issues? And for folks who participate in the Dyke March, what are the politics and the things that are being pushed for now?
You know, I'm trans. I'm visibly trans in ways where, you know, when I was in the Dyke March, I don't think people were going to mistake me as a cisgender person. None of the years that I marched I think thought that that might have happened. And I certainly don't think that it would have happened this year. I think people recognize me as, like, a trans femme or a trans woman, or they're confused by my appearance. But I think that, you know, I'm coming into a space that was initially for a group of people that sometimes had, like, very conflicting, sometimes hostile opinions towards trans women. I think I can give an interesting example that's not necessarily about conflict, because there have been instances of trans women just being chased out or being yelled down, harassed, or even mobbed in, you know, dyke marches and dyke spaces by people who really don't like trans women in particular. And it's definitely like the example I'm going to give is not that, because a lot less of that is happening, let's say, in Toronto more recently. But I was at the Dyke March this year, and I saw someone who had a quilt. And on the quilt was the names of a whole bunch of famous lesbian and bisexual women throughout history. I noticed two names that stuck out to me in particular. One was Stormy DeLarvery, who was a drag king and dyke and a performer who had been at Stonewall, and they were a veteran. They would have been fighting police alongside people like Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera. And then another thing that I noticed on that banner was Ann Lister. And Ann Lister gets a lot of attention because she's kind of a more literary example, because she was a British aristocrat who kept a diary. But, you know, what's interesting is she was not a revolutionary person. She was rich, so rich off of coal money that she was actually able to prey upon poor women in her town and took advantage of them. And then when she decided she was done with them, she would most often have them institutionalized. And I was like, why on earth would anyone want to make an example out of Ann Lister? Like, yeah, she was writing about orgasms in, like, the, like, 1800s, but like, why would someone use her as a role model? And I noticed that they had Ann Lister on their quilt, but they didn't have any trans women. And obviously they were paying attention to Stonewall because they had Stormé, but they were more willing to include people like Ann Lister than they were to include trans women. And I just thought, you know, maybe it's just a coincidence, like, maybe different people were putting individual role models that they had, and it just so happened that there was not a single trans woman on the page. But, you know, they've already touched a base on Stonewall, and they've gone to places that, like, you know, I don't think people really need to go by, like, picking Ann Lister. And it's not like they have to represent me, but I just, you know, I think it's funny that people get glorified in history and they still miss out on, like, so many people that, you know, make way better role models than Ann Lister. Like, just, I don't think it should be controversial to say that.
So what about the community do you think supports those kinds of dynamics and challenges them?
I mean, that's tricky to say. I think that a lot of people can read about, you know, like, an aristocratic lesbian that traveled the world before people thought that, like, people were having gay sex, because, you know, I guess her story became popular before, you know, a lot of the anthropological work to, like, uncover the fact that people have been doing it like this forever, whether it's gender nonconformity, transness of, like, some shape or form, or, like, just same gender attraction. People have been doing that for a long time. And, like, granted, Ann Lister was one of the examples that people, like, uncovered to, like, kind of expose that, you know, Victorian England was not just chaste straight people. But, like, I guess if you're bringing that into a quilt that you've sewn and brought to Pride, I'd hope that, you know, like, you know a little bit more about each of those people. And so, like, I guess that gets to, like, where I am. Like, should I expect trans representation from everyone at a dyke march? I don't think so, because not everyone is coming as a trans person. But, you know, some people are coming as trans people, and they are, you know, they're bringing themselves into this space. And I don't know, like, I ended up, like, having a great time at dyke march this year, despite, like, seeing something like that. Someone asked for my number. We had a date. It went well. Like, I felt like in that space, I was not, like, completely othered. But, like, at the same time, you know, there's, like, things that you see that, like, give the impression that people aren't necessarily on the same page as you might want them to when you enter that space. And it's just, I would say that, like, there's some things like microaggressions, like getting stared at in certain ways, and, like, having some people, like, strongly imply that, like, you're not welcome. And that's, like, it's a lot, because it's, like, a very politicized history there.
Tell us a bit about your own personal histories as queer activists, trans activists related to the Dyke March. Like, why is this an important space for each of you?
So Dyke space is important for me, I guess, personally, because that's what I saw when I was first coming out. Like, the summer that I came out, I went to my first Dyke March in Toronto 11 years ago, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, what is this? What is this space where, like, all of these queer women and other Dyke-identified folks are, like, actually taking up space? It's not like what I saw with the Pride Parade, where people were, like, behind fucking barriers. And it just, I feel like with the Pride Parade, mm-hmm. it's like, oh, let's come see, like, the queers at the zoo and, like, stand behind these barriers. And it's just, like, it feels so othered, and I hate it. Like, you know, I mean, I march in it because of the work that I do in my day job, which is, like, you know, all good and fun. But what the Pride Parade has become does not represent me and the majority of the people that, you know, are a part of my various communities. So, yeah, like, the Dyke March is really important as a way to take up space and be visible. As a genderqueer Jewish femme, I feel like I can bring all of those identities to one place and have a lot of people in my various communities feel safe and create dialogue like amongst each other and, you know, challenge each other to like talk about the hard things that are not being talked about like in the mainstream media. And I sort of want to get back to the corporatization of Pride for a second. It's really interesting to see all of these like different corporations like jumping on the LGBT, et cetera, bandwagon, like, you know, everywhere you walked throughout the month of June, there were fucking rainbow flags everywhere. Like Roots had one that was like, be nice.
I think that the biggest one for me is seeing the banks with rainbow flags on them, but then right beside them, they have like their windowsills where like, you know, someone could sit down on that, but then they have bumps and spikes to prevent homeless people from lying down. So you have like this really just absolutely disappointing, like depressing juxtaposition of like homeless spikes just saying like, if you don't have a home, you don't deserve to be able to sleep. You don't deserve to be able to live. You don't deserve to be in this space, along with pride flags. And that's like, I guess, the logical extent to like where banks are taking this.
Yeah. So I think part of, you know, all these different stores and banks and just, you know, corporate spaces having rainbow flags and like having pretty bullshit slogans like peace, love and be nice. Like, what the fuck is that? Like, do they just think like all LGBT people are quote unquote nice? Because a lot of us aren't. But anyways, like, yeah. I mean, part of what I wanted to do was like go in and be like, so why are you jumping on this rainbow like bandwagon? Like, I wanted to like, I feel like in so many ways, they're actually like stripping the sex out of Pride. And obviously, Pride is not all about queer sex. But like, I feel like if a bunch of queer folks, like queer and trans folks, like walked into any of these stores and like had a conversation about like queer sex, like people would freak out and like run the other way. And you know, that's part of the like, so I mean, there's so many problems with the corporatization of Pride, but like part of the problems of Pride getting so corporate is that like it's very trendy to support quote unquote LGBT rights because like everyone wants to look inclusive and like, you know, that is the future and all this stuff. But like these companies and stores and all these things like don't recognize the history and don't create a space to talk about the history. And they don't talk about sex at all.
I think what is... I don't know about you, but like I go to Pride events like Naked or Next to Naked.
Yeah. Yeah,
because
totally.
They can't get photo ops. They can't be like, look at all the queer people who are beside giant like posters of an advertisement. They can't do that. Like,
yeah. And
my
actually,
boobs are out.
Yeah, totally. And as someone who actually like cycles topless with like a giant like bike painted across my chest every single year, like I have like a billion cis men trying to take photos of me, and like some of them will ask for consent and I'm like, cool, what is this for? And they're like, oh, it's my personal project. And I'm like, oh cool, your spank bake, yeah, I'm not interested. And so this year I had one guy who was like, hey, can I take your photo? And I'm like, yeah, what's it for? And he's like, oh, it's for my YouTube channel. And I'm like, that's great. I'm not interested. And he's like, I photograph this every year. And I was like, cool. And then this cop comes up to us and is like, I'm sorry, is there a problem here? And I was like, yeah, he wants to take a photo. And like, I'm not giving him permission. This is like dyke identified space. And this like cis straight man just had like such a problem with it. Like, this is not your space. Like, go home.
I like have actually... been in a situation where my partner and I were asked to pose for a photo, and I think, you know, I think this person, like this person was a woman, and I got the impression that they were a tourist and were kind of here for the spectacle, and I was topless and I had a bag that was like covering up, and I was like wearing panties, and like, this is going to be a little awkward, but, like, if I'm in panties, there's, like, a dick print on the panties. And so I was just, like, out there like that. But I had my bag, like, positioned in front of my crotch. And she takes my bag and moves it away from my crotch so that that can be in the picture. And I move it back. And I was, like she had then already moved to take the picture. And I was, like, whoa, that was... so much. And I kind of just like, I don't know, like part of me thinks that like, you know, if I like pose for photos, one of these days it's gonna go online, and if I'm looking good, then that's great. But like, and like, I kind of like am in a situation where I also like don't really care for a lot of the people taking pictures of me, but it's like, I've dealt with that like a slightly different way. I'm just like, yeah, sure, whatever. But like, I've definitely like had people just go above and beyond, like when you say yes that they can take pictures of you, then they'll go to invade your personal space because they want to pose you, and it's like, that's too much.
So what I'm hearing, there's the sanitization on one end, this co-option on the other, and but also this incredible fetishization of queer and trans femme bodies that's happening.
I think that it would still happen to me, like, if I was more butch, but, like, yeah.
After the break, we'll hear more about the Dyke March, as well as queer and trans organizing in the city, from Jades and Lauren. Stay with us.
I get it.
Maybe I'm not big because I don't blog or Twitter. Dog, I'm bitter. I didn't have it on the flop, but I'll win it on the river. Longest winner got me seasoned. Now I'm a non-beginner, meaning not yet a veteran, but nevertheless, pick the drug or the rapper, man, I'm better than meth. Dope is either or ether, the drug or the J-Diss. I would say dope is reefer, but I would be too basic. And overplayed, overslaved, won't complain, no. The game's been good to a youngin' out of London, so I'm grateful. Not just for funding or the fans, but for the chance to say something. It wasn't in the plans at first. It was sad days, halfway to graduation. Cap and black hate making job applications. I hate the catchphrase, Canadian rap sensation. Shaq K don't have change, big as the Appalachians. But since the label put me out like ashtrays, the smoke cats, I have gained some accolades and admiration. It's grown since then, though that second album there was so old school. Folks called it Old Princeton. I'm still penny pinching, though it's so fine. My billfold holds still as pigskin when it's field goal time now. That being said, it's still 09, and I still got a line of credit, still 09, but they charge no interest, so I pay no interest, meaning I pay no mind. If there ain't no fun, I'm fine. I hope I ain't boring y'all rapping about rap, but the only thing I love more than rapping is napping, and I know nobody wanna hear me rap about that. You want the underdog spazzing on the track. I get it. Well, my name ain't Gretzky, but y'all know better than to check me in the game. I hold records like a technique. Tell the referees, peek at the press seats a sec, please. Drop your gloves, OJ. I knock you in the next week, make you get teeth replaced. Can't use plates, what you get to eat gives new meaning to Tuesday. Like watching you breastfeed, doomsday. Move on these squares like a chess piece, I'm deadly. Even if you're supernatural, I'm Craig G. Jesse James meets Jet Li. Killing these fakes at breakneck speed. I make your head steam like a pet peeve. Get your neck squeezed till the breath leaves. Got the finesse and the prestige and more Mac than 10 tech geeks. This and XP. Best in the league of vets like ex-Marines. Highest pedigree. When I get the beat, it's heredity. Genetic freak poetically. 110 degree Memphis heat spitting steadily. Medically decapitate this rapper's face. Still won't get ahead of me. I'm the best I'll ever be. Yeah. The cat's out the bag. The new shad's out. Now they spell it S-H-A-D-D the way I spaz out. I don't bad mouth, but I quickly put down a cat if you bit me like boys, boys, sing free. Welcome to the big leagues where they pitch heat. Still on a hit streak. My rap is like batting 360. Hey, Rippy, slow down. Do something less cerebral. I ain't big enough yet. I gotta keep impressing people. I get it. Guess it's a lesser evil. Weapons lethal as a desert eagle. Now my lethal weapon one. You don't get a sequel. I get it. No eviction notice, still I'm homeless on a poet's mission. Not that I'm a fiend, stealing bass like Otis Nixon. Living on the street, now I'm living on the road. Consistent, making fans multiply like a coefficient. Record sales, I'm making low commission, but the vision's mine. They don't change my record like pitching and no decision. Guitar playing MC, yeah, I'm known for spitting. While I'm tapping on my fender like cars in a slow collision. The precision of my flows in terms of tone and diction is akin to that of the old masters of prose and fiction. So many sold their souls, my soul ambitions to hold. Solid, so calm and bright as a solar system. I'm from a soul tradition. Heads think I'm going to prison because I'm talking off this rap sheet with the most conviction, the most commitment. No other pro is so proficient. Look, hold a spit and rock him, North Pole edition. Listen.
Let's talk about the term dyke. Why does this word need to be reclaimed?
The word dyke is a lot like the word queer. They are words that were considered derogatory for a long time, especially in the 80s and 90s, when folks, mainly straight folks, would call people queer and dyke as like really bad things. And, you know, in this day and age, like queer has been reclaimed. Dyke has been, I feel like dyke has been like less reclaimed compared to queer, but like it's kind of making a comeback. But the whole point of these words to be reclaimed is that they were seen as this really like negative term. Like these were both negative terms for a really long time. And so for folks, you know, I think it's a lot of like younger people reclaiming these terms. And it's a way to kind of like turn these terms on their heads and make them our own. I feel like it's not very common these days, especially among younger folks, to identify as a dyke. So I think the name Dyke March is this really interesting like blend of history meets like what's happening today. And so carrying that history forward is a way of reclaiming the term dyke and making it our own and making it inclusive. And it's sort of like bring your whole dyke self to the march. And mm-hmm. that can mean however you want to self-identify.
I think that one of the interesting things is that while I would say that both are like pretty reclaimed, it's also like it's really based on your demographic and like your geography, like whether or not you're going to think that it's like sufficiently reclaimed. And I've seen like some people who feel frustrated because, you know, you have things like queer studies or like the queer community and like straight people are just using the word really casually, like with very little attention to like actually what's going on in terms of like the history of reclaiming it. And like, you know, they don't have a choice but to call themselves queer, which they don't necessarily want to. And that's like really valid. But dyke is a little bit different. Some people feel very guarded around the word dyke. And, you know, they feel like, you know, this is only for lesbians. And on one hand, I think that's like the primary recipient of the slur. But, you know, historically, who has even been able to march comfortably in the Dyke March gets like really obscured because at some point, like the way that, you know, if you appeared a certain way, if you were femme as opposed to like butch, really at least somewhat gender nonconforming, whether or not you were a real lesbian was like something that was suspect. And like now a lot of people are talking about how like people treat you like you're not really queer if you're bisexual. And, you know, I think that that's true, but in a lot of ways they kind of overstate how queer other people are and like whether or not, you know, anyone has always felt like they fit in with queer people. Because I think for most queer people, they don't always feel like they fit in. And for that reason, I think that, like, you know, to have all sorts of people, whether they're lesbian or whether they're women or they're gender nonconforming people, marching the Dyke March, I think that there's like a certain amount of like deference and like knowing who like a Dyke March is supposed to center that's involved. But I also am like just very cautious about like saying, oh, only this very specific group can reclaim it. And I think that, you know, that's also run up in some danger because one of the things is that, like, historically trans women have not been very included. And it in a lot of circles, like, some would not want to, but for others, like, it was taken for granted that trans men would be a part of the Dyke March. And there's some interesting assumptions that, like, you know, that there's, like, some continuity between, like, butch womanhood and trans man identity, which is something that some people are feel very strongly about and saying, like, oh, there's no connection. And some people feel very strongly in saying that, like, oh, but, like, I grew up in this community, so I should be here. And kind of where that leaves trans women in terms of, like, people who might not have grown up in that way or are kind of coming into it in a different way. And I guess I'm kind of in an interesting situation because it's true, I didn't necessarily have an experience of growing up as like a cisgender person who was attracted to women. I'm trans, but I also like have very little experience dating anyone who wasn't like a lesbian or a bi woman. kind of as a woman, and almost all the people I dated before coming out as trans ended up coming out as bi, or just ending up eventually later deciding that they're just lesbian, which was kind of validating for me. But I guess there's all sorts of like paranoia around the gender of people marching.
I also just want to jump in and talk about the fact that there's a lot of communities that have Pride and don't have dyke marches. Montreal, for example, had its first dyke march like within the past 5 years, and that's Montreal. Like, wow. Ottawa has a dyke march. I think Halifax has a dyke march, but it's also this pretty like privileged, like, you know, downtown thing to like call yourself queer and have a dyke march as well. Like, I would say the vast majority of communities that even have like so-called pride celebrations in Canada, like, don't have a separate dyke march or even a trans march. So it, you know, we do live in like an urban center in Canada. So the fact that we even have like a day to take up like trans space and to take up dyke space, like, it is a fucking huge privilege. And I think like it's pretty important to like acknowledge that, and hopefully like Toronto and Ottawa and like all of these other places that have dyke marches and trans marches can like lead by example and hopefully inspire other communities to like have these separate political like taking up space marches as well, like separate from the pride parades, because ultimately, like, you know, we are here to take up space, and let's see more of that happening. Like, they're just, we have like, whoa, one day to take up trans space publicly, and like, whoa, one day to take up like dyke space publicly. Like, it's pretty, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that in many ways it is kind of privileged in terms of like who actually is getting to participate in those things now. But there's something that like makes me wonder, like, I can't help but think that, you know, there should be more, and like what we have now was kind of like, in many ways, like, we lost things. And like, that's talking from the perspective that, like, you know, Pride erupted with regards to like the people who literally couldn't really deal with police and homophobia and transphobia anymore. And that was like trans women of color who were living in impoverished situations in New York in particular. And so they started it, and they actually had that taken away from them. And, you know, sure, like, it's our privilege now that we're able to keep on doing this, but it's a privilege that is relative to other people, but it doesn't mean that it's like not unjust that we have that sort of like disparity in terms of who gets to actually have representation and who like can find larger communities in more remote places. And it's kind of like interesting as well, because, like, you know, Pride started as a resistance to like a homophobic society and a transphobic society, and then Dyke March started in resistance to like a lesbophobic sort of like gentrifying Pride March, and then now we're also seeing like the creation of trans march that's kind of started up over the last decade. And it's kind of interesting for me to see myself like getting more representation as a trans person, and like kind of coming to Dyke March as a dyke, as a lesbian who like ostensibly should have a place there, and kind of realizing that, you know, it wasn't enough that we had a dyke march before, because we still needed a trans march. And then I guess that just makes me think of all the different things that, you know, don't get taken up when we start making new days for sexuality and gender identity, because, like, you know, Pride got co-opted and dyke focused on a new issue, trans march focused on a new issue. But, like, when we look at how this has progressed, we still see, like, not everything's getting taken up. And like, one of the really major things that like makes me look at what is to be done, what is still left to do, is, you know, no one has brought up race, and we still only now are starting to see people come really critical of how race has been taken up, in particular like the way BLM has addressed the relationship that police have with the Black community in Toronto and with Pride in general, and how those are really like antagonistic things, and how like there's still so much to work out. And you know, another parade is a privilege in a lot of ways, but you know, something in me just thinks that like, one, we have to not forget to also pick up the slack in terms of racism in the queer community. And also, like, yeah, it's true that, like, in the city, like, we get a few more slices of the cake, but we can't forget that, like, this was built from the ground up. We deserve, like, the whole pastry.
Lauren, you mentioned queer sexuality and the invisibilization of femmes, of the fetishization of women, femmes, trans folks, gender nonconforming bodies. And I wanted to ask you, how is queer sexuality really important to the Dyke March?
Queer sexuality is important to the Dyke March because it's sort of like what I was talking about before in terms of, you know, the corporatization of pride. I feel like erases the idea of queer sexuality. It's, you know, it's sort of like taboo to generally talk about sex in a public mind frame anyways. And I feel like it's even more, you know, taboo to talk about queer sex. And so I feel like the Dyke March could do a lot more in terms of like actually talking about queer sexuality within like a Dyke context and what that means. And, you know, I mean, it is a political celebration. It's a political protest. But where does queer sexuality fit within that? So I feel like there isn't really like a space to actually publicly talk about queer sexuality within like the so-called Dyke context. But I mean, what does that look like in terms of a public march? Like, yes, there is more visibility for queer Dyke identified folks like the leather community and the kink community. And like you can see that visibility, but there's still obviously like a lot of erasure within those communities as well, especially within the leather community. Like there's a lot of racism, like Jade was mentioning, you know, in the queer community itself. There's also a lot of racism in the leather community and kink communities. How are we talking about queer sexuality within the Dyke community and also like focusing on the racism that exists within these communities and the transphobia that exists within these communities? So I think that, you know, there's a way that we can augment the conversation about queer sexuality within the Dyke March and like, you know, just even like queer activism in general. I guess it's kind of tricky to have like, how do you have a conversation about like, yeah, queer sexuality within like a public march?
I think that what's interesting is that like the importance of pride has in a lot of ways been like denouncing the fact that queer people need to seek the expectation, like the seek to meet the expectations and the expectations that people have to like be straight, like to not talk about their sexuality, to hide in shame. And like, that's a lot of what pride is about. It's like answering this need to end a double standard around sex. And it's kind of tricky because a lot of queer people, you know, you don't necessarily meet a queer person and automatically expect to like start talking about screwing like right off the bat. Like some people do.
I do.
No, that's fair. And that's sometimes been my experience, but it's not something that I take for granted.
Of course.
Because I think that, you know, what's important is that we don't get harassed or judged for having those sorts of consensual conversations, and that there's not a double standard applied to us. And that's where you get, you know, the fact that we should be proud of these things and not ashamed. And like, pride is political on like a much grander scale than that, but like on a personal level, that is like kind of a really specific need that's being addressed, that like, you know, it's not a conversation that you should be afraid to have in public. Like, sure, you don't want to like shout it out at a restaurant, but you can talk about it at a restaurant. And like, I have, and I've like gotten dirty stares from people who were like not even close to us in the room. And it's interesting because, like, some people have really contrary needs to that. Some people, whether they're, for whatever reason, sex repulsion, survivors, people who are on the A spectrum, and people who are otherwise uncomfortable talking about it, they have, like, a separate need that sometimes they are going to need space that is different from a queer community that wants a little bit more space to be able to talk about themselves and not feel like they're outsiders. And so there's like a couple different needs. And like above all though, like you're not talking about this with people in a parade, because a parade is like, well, you might not be talking about this with people in parade. You like, depending on who you're with, you're usually going to also be trying to make sure you don't get caught behind a crowd. You're going to want to make sure all the people you came with that day don't get lost. Maybe there were like special events or like a float that you have to take care of in a march, like all sorts of other things that you're worrying about on the day of. And that's because like, yeah, it shouldn't be sanitary. Like there should be naked people. There should be people who are like kind of condemning like a society, showing off their bodies, being proud of their bodies. But, you know, it shouldn't necessarily have to involve like turning observers into participants in like your own sexuality, not just because there's not everyone there is into that, but because like everyone there is like on some level busy and it's just too hard to figure it out. So like, I don't know, I think there's definitely a large showing up of like queer sexuality to come and talk about sex and be proud to talk about sex. But, you know, sometimes you are busy marching and like you can't necessarily tell everyone about like how to most safely or how to most like responsibly have sex while you're doing that. It's not necessarily like a sex ed event.
What does racism in the queer community look like? In you mentioned the leather spaces, kink spaces, and this has come up a few times in our conversations.
I'm a white person, so I really obviously like can't speak to the racism, you know, that is directly affecting people of color. But there is a majority, at least in like the leather communities that I am a part of, there is majority white folks there. And there's definitely a generational divide that I feel like older generations really need to unlearn and make a lot more space for people of color. There needs to be more like people of color taking up space. And when I say that, I mean like people of color need to have the space to have their voices not included, because it's not up to white folks to like step aside. Like people of color should be like, and I'm saying this as a white person, like I want to see white folks step aside and people of color feel empowered to take the lead on creating space that looks safe to them, not white people's idea of what space looks like for people of color.
So what do you think your role is as a white person in supporting the people of color in your community?
So my role as a white person, especially as a member of the kink community and the queer community, is to listen and to take a step back and to show up for people of color when they are the ones, when folks of color need white people to support them and need accessible space. And when people of color want to create their own space, it's essential for white folks not to be there to take up space. I want to be a part of a community where people of color are not to feel included. This whole notion of inclusion is so problematic in so many ways.
It's like opposite of what like Pride was going for with liberation.
Yeah, like inclusion is such a loaded word. You know, we could have a whole show just to deconstruct the whole idea of inclusion. People of color deserve their own spaces, and white folks need to give their resources to people of color. Like white folks should give financially to folks of color to have their own kink space, to have their own kink weekends. Like,
Red Alert. The spread of COVID-19 is at a critical level in your area or a neighboring region. Getting together with family or friends is prohibited, and traveling to other regions is not recommended. More targeted restrictions have been put into place to limit the spread and prevent a lockdown. Learn more at quebec.ca/coronavirus. Continue to wash your hands, keep a 2-meter distance, and wear a mask when physical distancing is impossible. We need to act now. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
The COVID-19 pandemic in Canada is serious. We must continue to practice all public health measures. Follow local guidelines for gatherings, maintain physical distancing, wash your hands, wear a mask, and download the COVID Alert app. If you have symptoms, even mild ones, stay home. Protect yourself and others. Learn more at Canada.ca.
The Prison Radio Show is a twice-monthly news show on CKUT. The show seeks to confront the invisibility of prisons and prisoner struggles by focusing on the roots of incarceration, policing, and criminalization, and by challenging ideas about what prisons are and who ends up inside. We are dedicated to programming that is directly collaborative with people who are currently incarcerated. With that in mind, we would like to let you know that we have a phone line for prisoners and their outside supporters. In fact, we have two phone lines. You can call us Collect from Bordeaux Prison and Riviere de Prairie Prison by calling 514-876-3748. We also have a number for non-collect calls. That number is 438-337-8423. Feel free to call that number and leave a message for us with news to share on the show or an audio message for your loved ones inside.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
This is Dragonroot Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Welcome to Dragonroot Radio, feminist waves brought to you by CKUT and the Center for Gender Advocacy.
The Dragonroot Media Collective aims to bring you feminist content that challenges interlocking systems of oppression and makes space for voices systemically silenced. Dragonroot understands media as being inherently political and emphasizes media skill sharing as a form of resistance.
We meet every other Wednesday.